Alexander Solzhenitsyn won a Nobel Prize as one of the most important writers of the 20th century. His masterworks, like The Gulag Archipelago and One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, helped change perceptions about the Soviet system, both in the West and behind the Iron Curtain. Now, a collection of his fiction titled Apricot Jam and Other Stories has just been translated into English. It's published by Counterpoint, and I'm pleased that it brings one of his sons to our show, Ignat Solzhenitsyn. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Your father started working on these stories in the mid-90s after the fall of communism and after he had returned to Russia. Was that a major turning point in his life as he saw it?
The return to Russia, of course, was a long-desired, long-dreamed-for event that he famously believed would happen even when others around him very publicly and also privately expressed a kind of amused doubt that it could ever materialize.
But he couldn't have imagined it would have happened the way it did. What did he think was going to happen?
He hoped that Russia would be able to emerge from under the rubble of communism, to use the title of that famous collection of stories by him and other thinkers in the 70s. Less painfully, more coherently, without so many extreme deviations to left and to right.
Well, he was unhappy with what happened after the fall of communism, how it transpired, as you say, but he was also unhappy here. What would have been his ideal, a communist system that hadn't been distorted by Stalin?
No, that was his ideal in his early 20s.
Before he was sent to the Gulag for crimes he didn't really commit.
Exactly. No, he was as staunch an anti-communist as ever lived, I imagine. He hoped for, I think, what any reasonable person might hope for, generally speaking, which is freedom and prosperity for his country. And so while the fall of communism he viewed as an unmitigated good in and of itself, he simply hoped that the emergence of it wouldn't have been so cruel and so thoughtless, careless of the vast majority of the Russian populace.
Well, he lived into the Putin era. So what did he think that was, as some people have suggested, a kind of a return to a more despotic approach? I mean, Russia is not a pure democracy. Would he have wanted to see a pure democracy?
Very much so. Very much so. And he criticized very strongly both Gorbachev and then Yeltsin and then Putin for their various transgressions, if you will, in terms of the very serious mistakes that they made in the eyes of my father and the eyes of many other people. In terms of not providing or aiming to provide democracy and a proper free market in its best form.
He had spent many years writing nonfiction. These stories represent a return to fiction for him. Why at this point? Had he started any of them in Vermont, or are they all from after he returned to Russia?
Well, he spent the bulk of the years in the West from 1974 to 1994 finishing his magnum opus, The Red Wheel, the history, somewhat fictionalized, but nonetheless history, of the Russian Revolution. Mm-hmm. This was the great work of his life and the great burden that he carried from teenage years. He had a destiny to write this work. When it was finally done, he felt that the major work of his life was indeed completed, and I think it unburdened him and allowed him to pursue something less important but artistically very fulfilling for him, this short fiction.
Well, the Red Wheel was published to mixed responses. Was that a major disappointment for him?
The Red Wheel hasn't been read yet, except finally it's being read in Russia. to speak of any kind of critical responses in
English language versions,
but only of the beginning mm-hmm. of the Red Wheel. So to speak of any kind of a critical reception in the West is simply it's just incorrect because people haven't read it. It doesn't exist.
Well, what happened in Russia? Did he return to great acclaim?
He returned to great acclaim as a writer, of course. He returned to a mixed reception politically because so many people viewed him through a political prism rather than through the main prism as a writer. But
he'd been forced into exile, and even though it was during the communist period, people are always a little suspect when something like that happens.
Well, anytime one takes a centrist position, a moderate position, and if anything describes Solzhenitsyn's views politically, it's moderation. Then, of course, attacks come from the left and from the right, if you will. And so some people viewed him, as many people viewed him, as a destroyer of the Soviet system, which was, after all, provided a reasonably decent living standard, so on and so forth. And then other people viewed him as just the opposite. And so he tried to toe the middle line because that's what he believed was most beneficial.
The works in this collection are called binary short stories. What does that mean?
It's a genre that he came up with. I don't know if others have used it before, but certainly it's quite original in that the stories are in two parts. And the insight, the connection between them is not revealed typically until the end of the second story. The connection might be a different time in the life of the same character. It might be two different characters. And that's the punchline, if you will, is how it connects.
In one of the stories, the new generation, an engineering professor finds himself meeting an old student years later under very different circumstances. This is the sort of thing you're talking about.
Yes, exactly right. And how the tables in this case have turned, and the generation that was reared by this old school professor is now devouring its parents, if you will.
Well, because they meet in the gulag. The old professor has been sent to the gulag. The student is part of the government, in fact, an interrogator. Did anything like that happen to your father? Did he meet old acquaintances in the gulag?
He did. He did meet various. He had extraordinary meetings, chance meetings in the gulag, which, considering that it was a vast archipelago of islands, spread across the Soviet state, is extraordinary.
In another of the stories, Zelya Buga Village, a soldier who fought in World War II, returns to the site of a battle 50 years later to find the Yeltsin era just as depressing as everything that came before it. How did your father feel about what he found when he returned? I mean, you said that he didn't love it, but didn't he see it as just a transitional phase?
It's difficult at that age, he was in his 70s when he returned, to look 30, 40, 50 years ahead and to view that placidly. He had hoped, as many did, as anyone would, I think, to see a change for the better in his lifetime and to see the utter destruction that was perpetrated under Yeltsin, whether wittingly or unwittingly, was, for him, as for many other Russians, very difficult to bear.
In this country, he was considered a hero by conservatives. In fact, a writer for the National Review declared in 2003, "This is a magazine that was pro-Solzhenitsyn before pro-Solzhenitsyn was cool." Is that something that he appreciated?
He did appreciate very much support from any number of public figures in the United States. But even more so, I think he was appreciative of the letters that he received, many, many thousands of letters over the years from ordinary Americans, people who read One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich or read the Gulag Archipelago and who found their lives changed or their worldview profoundly altered.
Well, people on the left really admired his work as well. Those great novels are great humanistic works of fiction. Won him a Nobel Prize.
Absolutely.
He died in 2008 when Vladimir Putin stepped down as president and assumed the role of prime minister. It's impossible to know, but what do you think he would make of Putin's plans to return to the presidency and switching places with Dmitry Medvedev?
Well, regardless of Putin's leadership abilities, regardless of his effectiveness or not as a leader, clearly this sort of action, by the way, not a surprise to anyone who follows Russian events, is precisely demonstrates your point that this is not a proper democracy. It's perhaps on the way to democracy, but we are still in Russia a long way from it.
We've heard over the years just how difficult it is to translate Russian into English. Nabokov felt nobody ever really did Pushkin any justice. What was your father's feeling about translations? Did he participate once he could speak English?
He reviewed superficially his English translations because he wasn't able to truly judge them properly, his English not being good enough. But he was aware of this problem, and it is a challenge, whether for Pushkin or for Solzhenitsyn.
Your brother Stefan translated some of these stories along with Kenneth Lance. Do you think your father would approve? I mean, the fact that your brother actually knew the writer probably helped, didn't it?
It certainly helped, because apart from an intimate stylistic awareness in both languages, what certainly helps and has helped my brothers and myself in our translating work has been direct access to the source and asking specific questions about shades of meaning in order to be able to render them as faithfully as possible into English.
Where were you born, here or
in Moscow? All of us were born still in Moscow before the exile.
And so how old were you when you went into exile?
1.5 years old. We were first in Switzerland, and then I was 4 when we came here to the United States.
He was arrested originally, wasn't he, before he was deported in 1974?
Yeah, that was his second arrest. The first arrest, of course, resulted in 8 years in the prison camps and perpetual exile in Kazakhstan. And then the second arrest came in February of 74, charges of treason and for his writings and immediate eviction.
But he was too famous to just be sent off to Siberia again.
A whole compendium of internal classified documents has been published that show the agonizing debates by the Politburo what to do with Solzhenitsyn, and one of the options was to kill him. One of the options was to send him to Siberia. They decided to expel him.
But he also was a victim of the winds of the shifts in politics in the Soviet Union. Initially, one day in the life of Ivan Denisovich was published with the approval of Khrushchev, wasn't it? And
it was a miraculous thing, if you will, for that to have happened.
Because it was seen as something that was critical of Stalin, and that was part of the transition away from Stalinism.
Yes. Interestingly enough, Khrushchev regretted publishing it as early as 3 weeks after the event. Such a psychological impact did that the explosion of this short novel have in the Soviet landscape. And he said, my goodness, what have I done? And it was too late, but it wasn't too late in the sense that in typical Soviet style, all the copies were, were taken out of the libraries, expunged, were burnt, were taken out of circulation, and it was never available for 30 more years.
Well, except in Samizdat.
Except in Samizdat, absolutely.
He also was working on the Gulag Archipelago at that time, and that probably would have gotten him in trouble no matter what. Didn't the KGB try to kill him at one point with ricin?
They did, exactly. There is a confirmed story with an attempt. He was injected with ricin, which is a very terrible kind of a gas chemical substance.
That was during the Andropov period.
That was still in Russia. That was in the Soviet Union in 1971, I think. So that was under Brezhnev.
Well. How much of your father's experiences were you aware of as a child? Did he talk much about them?
Well, he did not talk so much about them, but we were encouraged at our own pace and desire to read his books. And so in reading his books, so many of which are autobiographical partly, we became aware and we would ask questions.
Well, one of the stories, Times of Crisis, follows the life of Marshal Zhukov, who was famous in this country as well during World War II. He helped win the war for the Soviets, but was eventually ridiculed and turned on by Stalin. Betrayal seems to be a common theme in many of these stories, and I'm assuming that he saw that as the most basic theme of his time in the Soviet Union.
Well, I think I think you're right. While the portrayal of Zhukov is certainly very negative in this book, but nonetheless, the broader point is that Solzhenitsyn is concerned, I think, throughout his life, and in this volume in particular, with the moral questions that face each one of us and placed in positions of extreme peril, of extreme crisis, how we react. And it is no surprise that given the pressures and the brutal, evil nature of that regime, the Soviet regime, that so many of the characters in Apricot Jam in this book make choices that we wish we would not make in their place.
I want to thank you so much for coming by to talk about Apricot Jam and Other Stories by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. It is published by Counterpoint, and I've been talking with one of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's sons, Ignat. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.